Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Don Wiskin on, and Don certainly helps to support Radio Liberty. He has a fascinating story, a fascinating product he wants to tell you about. So without further ado, Don, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me again, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you tell us just a little bit about how you got started in this? Because this really isn't your initial field. Are you into construction, or what field have you been working in the past?
Well, I was a roofing contractor, and so I guess you could say I was in construction. I've been in sales, and I'm still doing a bit of construction work, actually.
All right. Well, tell us then how you got into something called Cartivite.
Well, it kind of all happened back in the 90s. My dad passed away in 94 from failed bypass surgery. He was 62 years old. And then in 97, in July, my brother Wayne at 44, we found him. He had had a massive heart attack and died in his apartment. They actually found him in his bathroom. Then in January of 98, my mother had a stroke and passed away in her bed. That's the way she wanted to go. She was 77. She had lived a good life, and she was happy to not be in the hospital and pass away. And my 53-year-old brother, who I hadn't seen for about 9 years, came to the funeral, and I said to him, "Doug, you're looking really good." He was 53 years old. And he said to me, "You can't believe how I feel inside." And 21 days later, he had a massive heart attack and died while his wife was parking the car at the hospital. He wouldn't let an ambulance come. And in that same year, in June of 98, my wife came home and found me on the floor in the living room. I was 42. I had had a massive heart attack, and she woke me up and asked me, you know, what was going on, why was I on the floor in the living room, and I told her I thought I had a heart attack, and she took me, she said, "Well, do you want me to call an ambulance?" And we lived 5 minutes from the hospital. I figured we could get there faster, and I said, no, let's just drive. And we turned the corner to the hospital, and I hadn't had any chest pain until just that moment, and it hit me, and I prayed to God that I made it to the hospital. And I walked in, and the lady asked me to sit down and give her all my information, and I said, "I don't have time. Here's a bunch of cards. One of them was my health card. You know, my wife's parking the car. She'll be right in." I walked through the double doors, and I grabbed a lady who just happened to be a doctor, and they just happened to have an empty bed in the heart section of the emergency ward, which is quite unusual around 5 o'clock at night. Within half an hour or so, I don't remember much after that until 2 days later when I woke up, and in denial of even having had a problem, I checked myself out of the hospital because I had a roofing business and all these people working for me and responsibilities. And I really couldn't afford to be sick. And from there, I joined the Healthy Heart Program, and, you know, I had an angioplasty, actually, and I was told how much damage I had done to my heart. I had lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue from the time that I waited to go to a doctor. And I was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability because I had an ejection fraction around 38%, and I had no upper body strength. As it turns out, though, I joined the Healthy Heart Program, and I learned a bit about diet and exercise, and it was helping a little.
All right, hold that thought, because we're going to have to just take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back with Don Wiskin. All right, Don, well, just go ahead, pick up your story. And, of course, you joined the Healthy Heart Program. You're on diet. You're on exercise. But you've got the 35% decrease in the ejection fraction of your heart. So pick up the story from there.
Well, my wife got very, very involved with this. She met with a dietitian and really was trying to help. She took a tofu cooking class. And at that class, somebody there told her about these garlic cayenne drops and what they had done for some people that they knew and for himself. And, you know, he gave me some information on it. He sent some information home with my wife, and I read the information, and I thought to myself, you know, what do I have to lose here? So I started buying it and taking it. It was, you know, a garlic cayenne mixture with things like hawthorn, valerian, milk thistle, ginkgo biloba, and bilberry. And I started taking it, and over time, over a period of a few months, I started noticing that I had a little more energy, and I didn't tire out as easily, and I was able to do a little more than I could before. I still couldn't pick up and carry a bundle of shingles, which was my profession at the time, but I started noticing improvements on a regular basis. And after, this was in February of 99 when I started taking these. In July, I went to see my doctor, and she said, "Well, Don, are you ready to sign your disability papers?" And I said, "Well, gosh, I am feeling rather good. Is there any tests we can take to see if I still qualify?" And she snickered and said, "You know, Don, with this damage you've done to your heart, there's not going to be many changes." So she sent me off, and I had an echocardiogram, a stress test, an ECG, and all the blood work. And I went back to her office to check in on all of this, and she says, "You know something, we can't find anything wrong. We can't find the damaged heart tissue with the echocardiogram, and your ejection fraction is between 65 and 70%. On the stress test, the lady administering it, she shut the darn thing off when I started jogging at about 14 minutes and told her to speed it up. And she told me I was in 110% better shape than the average man my age and to get the heck out of there. Even on my ECG, which showed the rounded areas where my heart was dead instead of spiking, it was identical to one I had done in 1995. And so it was totally the way it was before I even had this problem. And my doctor was very amazed. My cardiologist, now, he wasn't quite as excited about the whole thing. He, you know, believed that it was the ramipril or the Altace or the metoprolol that he had me on, maybe even the 325 milligram coated aspirins. I don't know what he thought, but
hold that thought right there for just a moment, and we'll bring our other stations back on. Well, Don tells, of course, after he had his heart attack and they told him he'd lost the 30, his ejection was down to about 36% of normal, and he was anticipating going ahead and simply being disabled, but he probably could have gotten on a permanent disability, but instead of that, somebody told him about a cayenne pepper, garlic, multivar herb, and I'm sure Don can tell you what's in this. He started taking this medicine, and he kept getting better and better, and to the point where eventually he was able to go back to the heavy work he'd done before. And when they had offered to put him on disability, he insisted on being checked out again, and they didn't find any serious evidence of injury. Of course, he had an area where his heart had been badly damaged, but it seemed to have made at least a partial or a pretty good recovery. His ejection fraction went up to, what was it, 60 or 70%?
Between 60 and 70%.
All right, and so, of course, one doctor was very amazed. The cardiologist thought it was all the wonderful medicines that he'd been giving him, and, of course, didn't put much count in the story of this cayenne pepper and garlic preparation. But apparently this has been known for a long period of time, and people who practice alternative medicine, that cayenne and garlic and these things really can be beneficial. So why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, I went on to start to tell as many people as I could about this, because it was, to me, it was truly amazing to actually have my life back. So anybody and everybody who would listen to me, I told them about it, and a lot of people started taking it. One day I had an opportunity to go on a radio show in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I went on the show, and people phoned like mad wanting to try this and see what it would do for them. And, you know, really, Dr. Stan, I was just an average, typical North American. You know, I worked really hard, but I think I ate way too much fast food. And I believe that that's what just about killed me at 42 years old. You know, I always thought that the government and big business was looking out for my interest and my welfare. But after I had a heart attack, I found out that, you know, the government actually has no idea why there is so many sick people today.
No, I think maybe there's some people who do, but after all, there are too many people around, and I hate to say this, but there really are people working in government who are putting out entirely the false information. In fact, only recently have they changed the entire food pyramid. For years, they've been telling us all the wrong things to do. Now they're beginning to stress fruits and vegetables, which they should have done, and they've known about it for 20 years, and only recently have they put the food pyramid now on its side and really changed the recommendations. So how could you be so wrong for such a long period of time unintentionally? I mean, it's been known that people are Seventh-day Adventists who are primarily vegetarians really do so much better than and they live a lot longer when they're not eating all the meat and dairy products that that we enjoy and we do eat. And I'm not going to give all of them up, but certainly the stressing of these can get you into real problems. So anyway, you're feeling better, you're talking to people, and you're telling them about this product. And are other people benefiting from it, or is there any sort of a study or anything that that shows really what it can accomplish, or is it more or less the way people get better and they say, gee, I think this is a great product?
Well, actually, I've been at this for over 5 years now, and we've had thousands and thousands of people buy and take our product, and they become repeat customers because they just don't want to stop after the first couple of months of, like, mostly they buy 180 capsules or 100 milliliter a tincture. They take three capsules, one with each meal with food, three times a day, and then, or they take the liquid underneath the tongue, 15 drops three times a day. And when that 2 months is up, they've noticed enough improvements that they're back on the phone saying, you know, I don't want to run out. Get it to me as soon as you can. I actually have a lot of recorded conversations with people where they've called in and given us some type of testimony on our product. Would you care to hear one?
Oh, sure.
Okay, I'll see if I can pick one that's not too long here. It'll just take a half a second to get it up, and then I also have one from a doctor.
It didn't matter. They were just dazed aching. So I didn't want, I wasn't able to really walk too far, and they'd get food sore. But that's disappeared now. And I used to get the pads behind your toes. They used to burn, and I think it's because I'm a diabetic, but that's gone too. I haven't had that for about a good month already. That's disappeared. And I don't know if that's the stuff that's taking care of it or what. And I even had burning in just above the knee on my left leg.
Mm-hmm.
It used to burn under the skin, and my doctor told me that was from diabetes, and but that's pretty well gone too. That's just once in a while it comes back a little bit and then it's gone, eh? But it's not really, it's sort of like a burning, but just like something you want to scratch, and but it just seems to disappear, but it can get in the times that it's coming is less and less and less, eh? So that must be helping that out too. Well, I figure, remember the first time I talked to you, I listened to your program and different people there, and the way they said, anywhere from 5 to 6 months before you really know a lot of changes, you know what I mean? That's about what it takes. But in the first couple of months, like that helped out with my legs. It only took about 3-4 weeks, and I noticed my legs weren't quite as sore. I'd be laying down instead of the aching. The only time they ached is when I went for a walk or something like that. So then they'd start to ache. But other than that, then that gradually disappeared. Like, I couldn't walk from my yard to go up to the corner. That's not even a half a kilometer. And I'd get about halfway there, and I have to go back because my legs were getting too sore already. So, but now I walk there, and I walk to the other end of the road, and I come back, and my legs still aren't sore.
That's the kind of things that people keep telling us, Dr. Stan.
Well, that's really very impressive. It would be, anyway, of course, you say you have conversations with some doctors?
Oh, yes. Actually, Dr. John Matson, he's a very famous naturopathic doctor. He's written books called Eating Alive. His website's eatingalive.com.
Our program, and we use, you know, herbal formulas like Cardivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill. Now, going for a regular job, you know, a few months later, we know we're doing something right. The biochemistry that we're using in the book is just trying to explain the results that we're getting.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be perfect, but, you know, in our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. I mean, this basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. Keep working on that product. it's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well. If you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. You've got to understand that your body is programmed to heal, and you got to make it work that way and heal yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Inside help isn't going to solve all your problems.
And as I said, that's Dr. John Matson, M-A-T-S-E-N. He has a website, eatingalive.com. And on there, if you went to the monthly updates, July of 2003, or is it June? June of 2003, he has an article on there about one of his patients who was waiting for an angioplasty and took the Cardivite, and he didn't wind up having one.
Well, now, of course, do you manufacture this yourself? Do you get this from somebody else, or how does it come about?
No, actually, there's an Egyptian pharmacist who studied in Germany and moved to Canada in 1968, and with him he brought his herbal knowledge from when he was studying to be a pharmacist in Germany. He had to spend the first 2 years just studying natural medicines because there doctors prescribe over 40% natural medicines, and he had to know what all the herbs were, how they worked, know them by smell and taste, and how to combine them to make it happen. He actually says that he picked this formula out of different things that were used in the German pharmaceutical compendium to put together Cardivite: the cayenne, the garlic, the hawthorn, the valerian, the milk thistle, the ginkgo biloba, and the bilberry are all laid out there in German, mind you, and the knowledge is available to anyone. We just have to stop and take a look at what they're doing over there as to what we're doing here in North America. I mean, when you consider that, you know, the FDA, a government agency meant to protect us, makes over 40% of their income from the fees paid by drug companies that need to get a drug approved, I mean, how can a regulatory agent that's, you know, paid from the industry that they regulate be expected to be fair and unbiased towards the people that they're there to protect?
Well, I think we do actually carry a fascinating book. It's written by Dr. Marcia Angel, who was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, certainly the most prestigious, or one of the most prestigious magazines on medicine. In fact, when I was practicing, I used to read it regularly. When I went to medical school, I read it. But Marcia Angel has written a book called The Truth About the Drug Companies. Every American should read that book to find out the tragedy of what's happened in America. We've got people working for the NIH, you know, making tens of thousands of dollars a year. Not from their salary. They get their salary, but they're getting this for honorarium and special bonuses from the drug companies and consulting for the drug companies. And he who pays the piper calls the tune. And unfortunately, why the drug companies are simply bribing people and the scientists within government. Many people who work for the FDA, when they retire, they go to work for the drug companies. They have a revolving door there, and you really need to read her book. We carry it. It's called The Truth About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marcia Angel. I've tried repeatedly to get her on the program, and there's no way we can get hold of her. I think she's come under tremendous attack. In fact, I did a debate with one of the gentlemen, a doctor who actually works for the company that represents all the drug companies, and during the course of the debate, he mentioned that they were keeping a track of what she was doing. They knew exactly how many television and radio programs she'd been on, and I said, oh, you're tracking her? Or he said, well, we keep a clipping service. Well, they, whatever has happened, they think that they've made her life so miserable. She won't appear publicly, but her book says it all. And that is that you can't trust the drug companies, and you certainly can't trust the NIH and the Federal Drug Administration. So if you're really going to be concerned about your own health, well, you're going to have to get the facts on your own. I suggest the book very, very strongly, The Truth About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marshall Angel, who has a position at Harvard Medical School, a former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and a story that every American should hear. But, of course, you're not going to hear it very often. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Don Wiskin, talking about a product that he believes in very strongly called Cardivite. Well done. Of course, it's an interesting idea. Certainly the Chinese have used herbs for thousands and thousands of years, and they use them really very effectively. It was all done on a trial and error basis, and so many of our modern day drugs actually are based upon the herbs and things of that sort. They, of course, tried to modify them so they can get a patent on it. I'm not sure they really improve anything by modifying it. These products, the way God made them, seem to work pretty well. So you actually find that a lot of people really are tremendously helped by taking this product?
I'd like to say, Dr. Stan, that a really good product works for 60% of the people who use it. Cartivite works for over 90%. That's over 30% more. And to be truthful, in the 5 years that I've been doing this, anyone who stays on our product on a daily basis for 4 months or more, they never seem to stop. Our phone always rings every couple of months, and they're repeat ordering because they know darn well that there's many, many benefits there. Just as Dr. Mattson said, it's more than just heart and circulation. It's a form of oral chelation. So when we look back at the history of chelation, we go back into the 50s when chelation was actually first used to get the lead out. It was used for lead poisoning. They found that not only did it get the lead out, but it helped to improve their circulation, their energy levels, their overall health. And they went running to the College of Physicians and Surgeons and said, hey, this chelation is so great. Look what we've done. Look at the evidence we have. Look at what it's done for these people. And it was suppressed. And it was years and years and years before groups of people got together and formed chelation associations so that the doctors could get back involved and help these people get these metals and toxins out of our bodies, because actually this is what we're really concerned about. I mean, there's over 77,000 chemicals that are produced in North America, and we don't even know what they do to us in the long term. We've had people on Cartivite that were chemical engineers and worked around chemicals all their life and had all kinds of strange ailments, only to wind up finding Cartivite and getting better because they were chelating these metals out of our body, which are, you know, basically the beginning of all of the diseases. The metals affect the liver in such a way that the liver's not able to process the toxins that come in through our gut, and has to spill these peroxides out into our body because it'll destroy the liver because it's unable to work because of the toxins that are attached to the enzymes there and slowing it down from doing its job. It is quite amazing, what the sulfur content of garlic can do. And if you say, like, the sulfur content, why would it help? Things like mercury. We've all been hearing everyone talking about how the vaccinations, thimerosal, mercury gets in your body. Well, back in 1928, when they first tested thimerosal on people, they found that the mercury just disappeared after just eight seconds in the body, and they thought that by the test that the mercury evaporated. Well, mercury does not evaporate, but where does it go? Well, as it turns out, mercury is mined from sulfur, and in our body we have sulfur-based enzymes that the mercury attaches to and lingers there for the rest of our life unless we chelate it out.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Our guest is Don Liskin. We're talking about a product he really has sold on. It's called Cartivite, and of course it is something that seems to have helped many, many people. We'll be back in just a moment as we bring our other stations on board here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Stan Monteith, Dr. Stan, and our guest Don Liskin. He's talking about Cartivite. If you're out there in the listening audience, and of course you'd like any further information, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Don, how can people get in touch with you and find out more about the product?
Well, they can call us at our toll-free number. That's 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. We also have a website for those on the Internet. You can go to www.heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. We have plenty of information there. And if people would like us to mail them some information on it, we have plenty of that. We've had some articles written in, like, the Brewer Science Library and Health Resource Center out of Richland Center, Wisconsin, which basically profiled one of our users in New Jersey who, in his 70s, was having all kinds of health problems. It was mostly heart-related, and he was unable to do a lot of things. He went off on vacation, and 40-year-olds were having a hard time keeping up to him going through the hills and the trails that they were walking on.
Well, now, of course, how does the cayenne pepper work? Is that a vasodilator?
Yes, it is, but at the same time, it helps to improve your breathing and basically is improves stomach lining, helps keep your acid going, and it does a lot more than just dilating the veins.
All right, what about the garlic? What is its function?
Well, garlic, as Dr. Mattson said, you know, it helps to kill off the yeast overgrowth, but garlic has been used for many years. I would say that garlic was known as Russian penicillin during the Second World War, until penicillin actually became more popular. It's also a great immune system booster. But one of the most important things in garlic in this combination here is that it actually works to help to chelate these metals out. Because garlic has over 70 natural sulfur components, 30 of which can help to chelate mercury and other toxins out of our body at a low level. As the natural sulfurs flow through the bloodstream, they pick up the toxins and carry them right out of our body. People notice in just a few weeks to a few months the return of their energy and their overall well-feeling. As I said, it is a form of oral chelation, and I believe the garlic and the allicin content in there is one of the most important parts.
Well, of course, garlic has been used for years as an antibiotic, and certainly, you know, for one of the things that does seem, for some reason or other, has been known to act, certainly, in an antibacterial fashion. So I'm really learning about these various products. You know, of course, I've known the advantages of garlic. In fact, I take an Alamax solution. I've been taking it every day for some time, two or three years, and it's really helped me to keep from getting colds when everybody else was getting cold. So has any people commented at all? Has this really helped them as far as not avoiding the colds, upper respiratory infections, or is this mostly just to enhance energy?
There's a professor here at Queen's University. I'm in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, and he's been taking it for a couple of years now. And last year, he was just telling me, we play music together. I play a little guitar, and so does he. And he was telling me that he contributes the fact that he did not have one cold all last winter when he normally has two or three. I mean, being a professor at a university, you're exposed to a lot of people, and he did not get a cold at all, and he contributes that to Cartivite.
Well, Chris, are there any controlled studies? I really haven't had time to actually the opportunity to do that. Have you ever been able to get anybody at a university to, you know, to do some sort of a controlled study on it?
Well, I'm actually working on it. The new Office of Natural Health Products, the new health dictate here in Canada that the U.S. is watching very closely, they've got it set up now so that they will give us $75,000 towards $100,000 worth of clinical study. We don't have to spend millions and millions like we would if we had a drug, but because of the interest in natural products and Canada's getting very involved in it, we're working on that. We just actually got our natural product identification number here in Canada. It's almost like a DIN number, but it doesn't do us much good in the United States, so we don't really brag about it yet. But we are at a point in Canada where we can start to make claims about its anti-inflammatory properties and its ability to help you to maintain cholesterol and help support circulation and liver function because we have the milk thistle in there, and even improve absent-mindedness because of our ginkgo biloba.
Well, of course, what about the cholesterol? What have you heard from the people who've taken it as far as the cholesterol levels? Because I will tell you that what is happening here in America as far as, you know, putting everybody on the statin drugs, which does nothing but poison the liver, and that's how it gets the cholesterol down. And I really feel very strongly that this is not the way to go. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Don Wiskin. We're talking about his product that he is marketing called Cardivitin. What about the cholesterol? What is there any evidence that this actually does tend to help lower the cholesterol?
Well, you see, in Canada, again, we have a book that's been put out by the Canadian Medical Association and the Canadian Pharmacists Association called HERBS, Everyday Reference for Health Professional. And in there, they use clinical studies that have been done to compile information for it. On one study of liquid garlic, in the first month, it elevated cholesterol levels. However, by 10 months, just this liquid garlic alone brought all of the cholesterol levels back into normal ranges. And the reason it raised it in the beginning is I'd like to say that, you know, your liver is going to create 1,500 milligrams minimum every day of cholesterol, whether you eat cholesterol-producing food or not.
Unless you poison it with your statin drugs, which the statin drugs poison the liver. That's how they work.
Absolutely. But if you're not taking the statin drugs and your cholesterol is normal and it's working away, it runs out into the arteries to put a Band-Aid on the damage that's been done by the free radicals. And until we actually get the right foods in our body for our body to do what it does best, repair itself, it's unable to do that because it doesn't have the right nutrients. We introduce something like Cardivite with these seven great herbs in here and all of these nutrients and that our body just eats right up. And it helps to repair that damage, and the cholesterol gets released back into the bloodstream for the liver, which created it, to dispose of it. So it's just kind of sitting out there as a Band-Aid. So when you first start taking it, within the first 30 days or so, it may elevate your cholesterol, but it's not going to hurt you. We like to say, you know, if you're having cholesterol tests done, don't have one done for about 3 months after you start this product, because your doctor might just go through the ceiling as you're cleaning up inside.
All right, fine. But you have found that, at least in your experience, that the cholesterol has come down.
Absolutely. My doctor here in Kingston was not my doctor when I had the heart attack. I was in Vancouver, British Columbia. And he had been our family doctor. He was my mother's doctor, my father's, my brother's. He knew us all. He's been a part of our family for just about 30 years. He actually phoned me, because my sister was telling him I was back in town, and asked if I would like to come in and have some tests done, because he was as curious as could be. So I went in there, and he did all of these tests on me, and I came back in to get the results. And the nurse who called me to come back in, she said, could you bring a couple bottles of that Cardivite for Dr. Christophe and you to take a look at?
Well, that thought will be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Don Wiskin. He's got some amazing stories about, you know, what this has done for him and for the people he knows. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, I'd like to know more about it. Why, certainly nobody can tell you more than Don. So he is a Canadian. He's up there in Ontario. He's, of course, has introduced this here in the United States. And apparently he's got a pretty good group of people who are using it and with the, claiming amazing results. Anyway, Don, are you commenting that your doctor had gotten started on this himself, or did he want that for the staff?
Oh, no. He wanted it for himself. He believed that if it was doing what it did for me, and as I said, he knew our medical history, if it did what it did for me, he was certainly standing in line to try it, which, you know, we're finding that more and more all the time. You know, doctors are, they're very interested in actually trying to make us healthy most of the time instead of just dispense drugs to us and send us home after our 15-minute visit. But they're also finding, too, that it was awful difficult to learn. You know, back in 1961, that was the last year that pharmacognosy, the study of natural medicines, was taught. After that, it was stopped, and then in 63, the drug company started writing the textbooks for the doctors. So we've never really looked at the herbs again until just over the last 10 years or so, when there has been quite a resurgence of natural products, because, you know, right now we're in a society where over 50% of our population has some form of chronic illness. And, you know, we're the richest society in the history of mankind, yet we are riddled with all this ill health. You know, even an article in the American Journal of Medicine stated that over 50% of North Americans have some form of chronic illness. Well, it seems to me that all this wealth that we really have You know, we shouldn't be having this sort of problem.
It's not happening, though, just simply by accident. Let me just point out my latest newsletter is on the story of David Graham's testimony before the United States Senate here on the Vioxx cover-up. Now, Vioxx, of course, was produced by Merck, and initially Merck had done a series of studies on this. The first one was known as 009. It was released in 1999. They found that if you used Vioxx, which was a COX-2 inhibitor, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, which worked just about like aspirin, maybe not quite as well as aspirin, but sure a lot more expensive, and, of course, it was supposed not to produce the gastric irritation, but there was a 700% increase in heart attack if you took Vioxx. So what did they do? They released it to the public, and they didn't tell anybody there was a 700% increase in heart attack if you took Vioxx. Now, how could you do something like that? And then my latest newsletter is actually his testimony, and then they kept running these other studies. It would be 500% increase, or that compared with something else that produced a lot of heart attacks like Celebrex. And still, with high-dose Vioxx, it was 3.5 times as much as Celebrex, which was 4 times as much as normal. So, I mean, you're actually releasing drugs that are producing heart attacks, and many of these people are permanently injured after the heart attack, and 30 to 40% of them will die. And they knew this, and they allowed these things to stay. So as we talk about our being the richest country, we've got some of the richest drug companies, and Merck, withdrew the drug, and then the FDA set up a panel, and it just so happened there were 30 people on the panel, and 10 of them had ties to the drug companies that were producing these lethal drugs that were killing people. And when it came to the vote on Vioxx, 9 of the 10 people who had been hired or had grants from the drug companies voted to put Vioxx back on the market. Fortunately, it's not back on the market, but, you know, what really disturbed me so much, Don, people would be so much better if they were not taking these drugs that are put on the market, because many times the drug companies simply lie about their safety, and in the case of Vioxx, why they sent out detail men. And there's a recent article in the Los Angeles Times that covered this. The detail men would go to the doctors, and the doctors would say, but what about the danger of heart attacks? And they'd say, you'll have to write to the drug company. You write to Merck to find out about that. So they'd write to Merck, and Merck would write back and said, you write to the FDA, and they'll tell you about that, because they have all the studies, whereas the FDA didn't have the studies at all. No doctor who's busy practicing medicine will write all of these letters. It was simply a cover-up of the fact they had products that were killing people. I'd lot rather stick with herbs and other things than take a lot of these medications, which are extremely expensive and maybe almost as good as aspirin.
Well, as Sam Ibrahim, the pharmacist who makes Cartavite, says, you know, even if you're taking your pharmaceutical medication and you take Cartavite along with it, it's going to help you because of things like the milk thistle. We're going to help your liver, which is being invaded with these toxins from these drugs. So, you know, there are benefits to taking pharmaceutical medicine. I'm going to be the first one to say that when I had my massive heart attack and almost died, if it was not for those doctors reacting, not being proactive, but reacting to my current situation, I wouldn't be here to share this message with people today.
Well, I think the doctors could do wonderful things, but recently, within the last few weeks, the Cleveland Clinic stopped using a drug that cost $500 for the shot or the pill, because, as they said, it really isn't any better than the medicines that cost $10 to give. So the $500 medicine wasn't any better than the 10-cent medicine, and so they just quit using it. That took a lot of courage on their part, but, you know, most doctors out there want to do the right thing. They've just read too much of the material that's put out by the drug companies. And boy, I would say, if you really want to know what's going on in America, you need to get Dr. Marshall Angel's book, The Truth About the Drug Companies. We carry it. That's The Truth About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marsha Angel, and it'll turn your hair green. Believe me, I've been on the front lines. I know what it's like. The detailed people come in with a nice smile, and they tell you how great their drug is. But when they're told specifically not to tell the doctors that this drug can kill them with a 700% increase in heart attack, But I bet you never even read that in your newspaper. But that's in our latest newsletter, simply Dr. Graham's testimony before the United States Senate. Well, Don, you know, certainly you seem to be getting the word out. Is the use of this product really picking up pretty well?
Actually, it really has been, Dr. Stan. You know, right from the first time I went on the air and started talking about it, people paid attention. They called. You know, the word of mouth is incredible. We have it in some stores, mostly in Canada. We have a few, and we have quite a few pharmacies across the, in a few spots across the states that are getting involved in and carrying our product because they've had their customers come in and say, I want this product. This is what it's done for me. The doctor has, or the pharmacist has seen that they've had their drugs lowered. Some of them were on 4, 5, 6, 7 pills a day, and over 6, 8 months, they wound up getting on less because their doctor was able to lower their medications. And this, to a pharmacist, is just enough to make them say, hey, what is going on here? Because I know there's something more. And any pharmacist or any doctor who's come in here from any other country, they know darn well that something's wrong with the picture when there is no natural medicines being prescribed by doctors here in North America.
Well, Chris, now, would health food stores carry that in the United States, or would it be primarily pharmacies or what? Because here in the United States, why, it would usually be the health food stores, because we've got quite a network of health food stores that are really doing a good job of bringing the people the vitamins and minerals and the other things that they're certainly not getting prescribed through regular channels. And I think it is an amazing phenomenon when people suddenly begin to realize that they are responsible for their health. Not the drug companies, whose motivation has never been to make them feel better. It's always been the bottom line.
Yeah, that's right. Someday you'll have to show up at the doctor's office with your tax return so he can figure out how much money you can afford to pay monthly on pharmaceuticals. But yes, we are in some health food stores, but we really had a hard time getting into a lot of the stores. Being a new product, some of them don't want to invest in the minimum order that it would take for them to not have to pay shipping. So a lot of our customers do call us, and, well, I mean, if you ever saw our client list and some of the people that are on there, it would be quite amazing. And when you see how many times they've reordered, there's nothing, Dr. Stan, like listening to some, and I'm going to put it politely because I'm just about 50 years old this year, some little old lady calls you up and starts telling you how much better she feels, how she's able to look after herself, how she's able to vacuum her own rugs and drive her car and go shopping, and they weren't able to do that. Well, this one in particular wasn't able to do that before. These are so rewarding. I mean, you know, when you're doing God's work, because as far as I'm concerned, this is a natural product. It's from things that was left here. Why did I wind up in my situation and get introduced to this product and go from being a roofing contractor to talking on the radio with people like yourself, telling them about this product? Something put me where I am and is lined me up with what I'm doing. This is a product that people really need because it does have a lot of benefits for everyone. I mean, it's not just heart specific. It's overall health. It's getting those toxins out. It's detoxifying your body, moving on, getting the energy to be able to exercise, because diet and exercise, I think, it's diet, exercise, and Cartivite. So Cartivite comes third on that list, even though to some people, if it wasn't for the Cartivite, they couldn't have done one and two, the exercise part anyways. So I really believe that, you know, it's just my luck that I've been able to share this message with people and to get this out there and to get that kind of response back from people that really need to be able to look after themselves, because in this day and age, the young people certainly aren't looking after the old people as well as they should.
All right, fine. Well, let's go ahead and get that telephone number out just one more time.
Okay, that's 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. You can call and we'll send it off to you, the Cartivite off to you in the mail, or you can call and get some information to see if it's something that you think you'd like to add to your daily regime.
And, of course, once again, the website, if people would like to get in touch with that.
That's www.heartdrop, heartdrop.com.
All right, fine. Well, I really appreciate it. Is there anybody out in the audience would like to call? Or why give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. And if we don't get any calls, well, I'll let you go, Don. But I really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to talking to you again on one of our other programs.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure to be able to share this message.
God bless. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Don Wiskin, and it's an interesting approach. I've actually checked out on this, and apparently the people are having some very, very good results. The cayenne pepper, which is part of this, really seems to be very much a vasodilator, and for garlic, it certainly seems to have, I know it helps people as far as infections are concerned, but it also seems to have some chelating properties to it. So as long as it works, that's the important thing. I will tell you that when you have so many of the products that are being put out today, and you begin studying what the drug companies are doing. And these large drug companies are making literally billions and billions of dollars. There was one of the executives, and I think it was the year 2001 or 2002, an executive from one of the major drug companies was making something like $72 million in salary, plus getting stock options for another $72 million. These people, believe me, are not interested in your health. And when you read the story of Pfizer and Merck, and certainly the story of Merck and the incredible story of Vioxx, and you'll certainly want to get a free copy of our newsletter, our April newsletter, tells you what Dr. David Graham said when he went before the Senate to testify. Now, this was covered in the newspapers, but the important things that he said were not covered. And you can pick up the stories that appeared in your newspaper a few weeks ago saying that, yes, Merck was thinking of putting Vioxx back on the market. And it did double the incidence of heart attacks, but that was pretty small. It did double them. And they used that term double over and over and over again. Double the incidence of heart attacks. That's not what Dr. Graham said. He said a 7-fold increase in heart attacks. That was with the original study, the 090 study that was done back in 1999 showed. And then, of course, they began comparing it in other studies with drugs that they knew produced heart attacks, figuring that Vioxx wouldn't be much worse, and it was a lot worse. And they covered these things up, and they would get doctors to write recommendations in the major medical journals, but they wouldn't give them all the information, and they would falsify the articles written in major medical journals. Now, that certainly is scandalous as far as I'm concerned. It's dishonest. People are dying. And, of course, as Dr. Graham had pointed out, tens of thousands of Americans died because of this. Now, he risked his profession. He will be, of course, blacklisted with the government. He'll be blacklisted with the drug companies. He spent his whole life working for the FDA, trying to make sure that the drugs we were taking were safe. And what was his reward? Why, he was relieved of his position. He's almost literally, he will never hold a responsible position working for government again. And what was his crime? He told the truth. And the government cannot allow the American people to realize really what's going on today and how many of the policies of the government are actually killing people here in the United States. If you would like, of course, to get a free copy of my April newsletter, which is, of course, the testimony of Dr. Graham, and I've shortened it a little bit just so it would fit on within the newsletter, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Of course, you can get this off the Internet. I just type in Dr. David Graham, the Senate testimony. You can probably get it, but if not, we'll be glad to send it to you. How could these things be going on in America today? Why would all the newspapers say the use of Vioxx doubled the incidence of heart attacks when the initial studies showed 700%? Why, very simply. Because we have some of the finest editors, newspaper editors in America that money could buy. And the one thing they do not want is for the American people to learn the truth. Let's go to Roger, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Stan. I'm just glad to get in before the break because wanted to let your World Band listeners know that your earlier two frequencies are doing very well on 9.840. And is it 7.? A little foggy on the other
No,
one.
I think that you got them both. Well, the earlier frequencies, right. One of them, of course, is 9.495. The other is 9.985. But
my apology.
That's all right. I appreciate that. That is the afternoon program, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't have a chance to listen to that, it's 3 to 5 on the Pacific Coast, 6 to 8 on the East Coast, at 9.495. And, of course, we're also on 9.985 for the time being, although I think we'll probably be dropping that because we're getting pretty good reception on the 9.495. So please listen to that. And then, of course, we have two frequencies here in the evening, and help us to get the truth out, the information you're not going to get elsewhere. Do you have anything else you want to say, Roger?
Yeah, you might.
Hold that thought for just a minute then. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Roger calling from Pennsylvania. Roger, go ahead. What does he want to say?
Yeah, you just may, after you come back out of the break, boost him again for the folks that missed him, and God bless.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks so very much, Roger. It's good to hear from you. Well, for our listeners out there, I really have learned so much since I left medicine, and many of these herbal products really can be very, very beneficial, and certainly we've checked this item out, at least we've talked to other people, and apparently it has a very, very good reputation. Before we put anybody on our programs on a regular basis, we like to look into the background and make sure that we're not going to be recommending something that fits into the snake oil category, but apparently cayenne pepper and the gin, pardon me, and the garlic, and then, of course, these other products that he mentioned there have been around for a long period of time. So, you know, certainly the herbs have been used. I know they were used in Europe. I was over there several times to medical meetings, and they've used them over there. Here in America, everything's been done to discourage the use of herbs. And, of course, why? Well, because they don't cost very much. And they want to get you on these fantastically expensive medications, and there is absolutely no justification for it. And the great tragedy of what you're seeing is that they've done everything they could to block your ability to buy the same identical drugs that are manufactured in England and sold in Canada, in the United States. They don't want you to buy them in Canada. Why? Because they may be half or a third the cost. And to protect the drug companies, and specifically to protect Merck and Pfizer and the other drug companies, which are going to come under tremendous suits, because, of course, the information is coming out that they knew their products were going to kill people, and they put them out and they withheld the information. Why, Congress passed legislation so that lawsuits could not be brought in state courts, or class action lawsuits could not be brought in state courts against these major drug companies. Why? Because the Congress does not represent you or the people or the families of the people who have been killed. We have in Washington, D.C. today some of the finest politicians that money could buy. And the current administration, with the help of the Democrats, pushed through this legislation that limited lawsuits, class action lawsuits, can no longer be bought in state courts. Now, apparently, some of those that are already there are going to be able to be brought forward, and I'm really hoping, of course, that the truth will come out about what Merck has done. But even more than a monetary compensation, the people who lied to the doctors and who lied to the FDA about the lethal effects of these drugs should be held before the criminal bar of justice. But it'll be a cold day in the Mojave Valley or in Death Valley when that happens. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time I need to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family, because that's primarily how we're able to do it. We do 5 hours a day to try to reach people across the country and really around the world with the truth about what's really going on and the spiritual battle that is being fought. The book, The Truth About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marcia Angel. If you'd like to know more about getting that, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. certainly one of my favorite books that will help you with matters referable to your health is Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's a personal friend, a retired neurosurgeon. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life is certainly, I think, probably next to my book, the best-selling book we have. Why? Why? Because it answers so many questions, and because people, once they've read it, usually want to get one for a friend, and I really believe that you'll be very, very pleased. With Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, it has a section on vaccines and what you should know about vaccines, about water fluoridation, about mercury and the mercury that's been in the vaccinations, about aspartame and NutraSweet and MSG. So much information there, and about, you see, it's been known for many years that there are certain foods that actually promote cancer, like milk. If you drink milk, your incidence of getting prostatic and other cancers increases significantly. But, of course, that information has been suppressed. Why? Because the milk industry doesn't want to get it out. But the scientific studies are there, and there's certain things, eating fruits and vegetables, will tend to markedly decrease the incidence of cancers and tumors. But, of course, it wasn't until within the last couple of months that the government actually put the food pyramid on its side and told the people something that has been known for at least 20 or 30 years. Why have they held off? Well, because, of course, a great deal of money is involved. And unfortunately, why we have people working in government who are told exactly what they're supposed to tell the American people. And a lot of this is very, very hazardous for your health. So Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, an excellent book. We have a four-tape set called Life-Saving Secrets, and it's four of my interviews with Dr. Russell Blaylock. And you really need to get that. You need to get our four-tape set on vaccines. You need to get our four-tape set on fluoridation, because you need to understand that most of the products that you buy are heavily contaminated with fluoride, which is one of the most vicious chemicals, one of the most poisonous chemicals. It's a bactericide. It kills bacteria on contact. It's an insecticide. It kills insects on contact. It's a pesticide, and it kills pests, rats, and other varmint. And so what are we doing with it? Why, we're putting it in the drinking water along with lead, arsenic, cadmium, polonium-20. That's fluosilicic acid. You think they're fluoridating your drinking water? Ladies and gentlemen, they're not fluoridating your drinking water. They're putting fluosilicic acid in with all of these other things that are all toxic and adding to the lead level. There is no safe level of lead, but they're giving it to you in your drinking water. There's no safe level of arsenic, or at least it's in the parts per trillion, and yet, of course, they're putting parts per billion into your drinking water. You need to have the information. So much of this is covered in Dr. Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and in the four-tape sets. We have actually two four-tape sets on water fluoridation. We have a four-tape set on mercury. We have a four-tape set on aspartame and MSG, along with Dr. Blaylock's excellent book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And believe me, it really does. You wonder why so many children are overweight? They're never going to tell you. It's aspartame. It produces in animals a brain lesion that when the animals grow up, they have endocrine and problems and permanent obesity, but totally suppressed. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We'll be back in just a few moments. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Michael Tesserian, and Michael is going to be speaking at the conspiracy conference. It's going to be held over in the Santa Clara area. For those of you not in this area, this is adjacent to San Jose, but it's by something called Great America. It's an amusement park just north of San Jose in Santa Clara, and Michael's going to be speaking there. There's a two-day conference on the 28th and 29th of this month, and if you'd like to know more about the conference, you can call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. It's a conspiracy conference, and of course, there are many people who believe that there is a worldwide conspiracy. I am one of them. I have very, very specific views. I believe that there is a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy against the God of the Bible, and but there are other people who have other ideas on what the conspiracy is. And so you're going to hear many, many different views and evaluations of what is going on in the world today, because obviously something is going on. Something is seriously wrong. We are having wars and revolutions and violence and disease and epidemics, and our economic system is teetering on the very edge of collapse. In fact, recently Paul Volcker wrote an article which appeared in the Washington Post, and if you haven't read it, we'd be glad to send you a copy, talking about the imminence of a major catastrophic event, which he believes will be in the form of a financial collapse. And of course, he says, I don't know whether it'll be with a bang or a whimper, whether it'll be sooner or later, but it's coming. And of course, we could, of course, stave this off. But as a wag man once said, what should be done is usually put off till later. And by then it's too late. And he said, I would hate to have that be the epitaph of America. Well, we have real problems, but what's the reason behind them? Well, let's get Michael's views on that, because Michael certainly has some fascinating views. And Michael Tesserian, thank you so much for being with us here tonight on Radio Liberty.
Dr. Monteith, hello. It's a pleasure to be on your wonderful show again. It's been a year, and really had a good time last time. Nice to talk to your audience again.
Well, why don't you give us a little bit of your background? I know where you're coming from, and I've been to your website, but why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into your views.
Well, my journey with the conspiracy started in Ireland. I'm from actually Belfast, Northern Ireland, which, as you know, is a very troubled part of the world, and people know that since certainly 1960, anyway, there's been the overt terrorism. We've lived under a state of, you know, martial law and terrorism there for the last 30 years. But of course, real students of European history know that it goes back to even the 1600s. And there's a very deep sense of a history in that country because of the oppression of these elites. So coming out of Ireland, you don't have too much choice there. You either, as a young person, you either, you know, can get involved in the terrorism and the violence there. But I come from a philosophical background. I'm part Indian. My mother was from India, so we were always brought up to sort of objectively look at things and to understand that there is a dialectic operating in the world. And I grew up educated to know that what we're seeing on the news and in the media and behind government is not necessarily the truth.
And of course, I think what Michael is saying is many times the same people manipulate both sides. The dialectic is two sides in opposition. And of course, it could be an act of futility to become involved. We'll be right back. All right, Michael, why don't you pick up the story from there? So I thought that's a very interesting concept, that what you're seeing in Ireland, as with most of the world, is the dialectic. So, but remember, of course, a lot of our listeners are not going to understand your terminology, so never hesitate to explain it so that they can understand it as well, because what we're trying to do really through our programs is to educate people. So you came from Ireland, you recognize that, you know, your job was not to get involved with the terror over there. Certainly there's tremendous injustice, a tremendous cruelty, tremendous oppression of the Irish people, and, well, you weren't going to get part of that. So pick up the story from there.
Right, and I certainly will be happy to explain it simply. My experience was such grassroots because, you know, I was coming from an extremely violent place in Ireland. I mean, the basic idea is that there's an incredible age-old violence being perpetrated there under the name of religion. And we understood very early on that this is not what is really happening here. Religion is being blamed. People are being put at each other's throats because of religious, you know, divisions, which actually, on the street level, don't really carry that much weight. This is being orchestrated. So basically, after a long time of observing this and then starting to really meticulously look at the rhetoric and the doublespeak of the politicians, and also just, you know, again, in my own life, losing a lot of friends. Almost everybody in my school, in my class, is either dead or in jail before their 20s. And, you know, again, a lot of very, very serious terroristic kind of people. So this terrorism, I discovered on an Irish context, look how interesting it has now become, my life, you know, now that I'm in America, because I came to America ostensibly to get away from all of that, you know. And yet, what do we find here now is the same threat rearing its head again. But what I'm trying to relate to the public here in America that I love very dearly is my experiences from Ireland, which is that, listen, don't fall for this. Don't fall for this government, this foe, you know, enemy that is created for us and presented in front of us. Because, you know, from hundreds and hundreds of years, the occult history of Ireland is very interesting. And the powers that be there were very successful, you know, at being able to present and create an enemy, turn everybody red, you know, in looking for that enemy and being focused on that enemy, and so that they could manipulate and control that country and bring it basically to its knees. It's a very old story. So I was on my guard, you see. My story is that I was on my guard, and then what I tried to do in an Irish context, which wasn't easy, I can tell you that, was to try and awaken my fellow friends, you know, to the fact that this was an orchestrated thing and wasn't terribly legitimate.
Hold that thought right there, Michael. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stand. Our guest is Michael Tsarian, and his theme is that basically coming from Ireland, you know, he grew up there, and so many of his friends are either dead or in prison because they fell into the trap. They honestly believed that there was a conflict between the English and the Irish, and of course they were going to be defending their homeland without realizing that both sides are being controlled in essence by the same people, because out of the strife comes control. It's really all about that. That's why, of course, Plato wrote so many years ago, 2400 years ago, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by conquest or treaty, and there's nothing to fear from him, then he's always out stirring up another war or so that he can rally the people behind him. You need an enemy. You need a strife so that you can keep the people under control. And I suspect that's pretty well what's going on in Ireland. I know very well that's what the war on terrorism is all about. And I know very well, if you study the history of all of the great conflicts of this last century, so often both sides have been controlled by exactly the same people. But behind that, of course, there's spiritual elements. So you pick up the story there, Michael.
Well, see, that's right. The people, the controllers who work in order to foment this kind of disassociation and hatred in the world, they're very cunning. They're extremely adept. They study human beings, and they know what their spiritual ardor is. They know what their social and emotional needs are. And what they do is that they subvert this. They have very sophisticated weapons. And these weapons that they use are more of the psychological and the emotional method, which of course always works, you know. And we, unfortunately, in the Western world are pretty, we're not immune to these weapons. They work on us, the individuals know exactly what strings to pull, as it were, in order to get the right kind of responses. And then, of course, I find myself, you know, in a considerable amount of trouble and danger in Ireland because my family were very politically active in Ireland, and of course were not open to the fact that this was a contrivance. They were totally seeing red and totally buying into, you know, their side of the seesaw, you know, and then of course you can get into trouble if you go abroad there, go to the media or try to wake up people. You know, you can pretty much they allow you to talk about almost anything over there, but you certainly can't talk against that fact that the top of the pyramid, some elite controllers are manipulating both sides of this Protestant-Catholic conflict or the old ancient conflicts that exist. So I continued to study it and found out, in fact, not just speculatively, but actually did find out the proof, you see, that these organizations are secret societies, that they are. I went to their own documents, found out factually that these exist, that these secret societies exist and are controlling the situation in Ireland, that the symbolism that many of the political parties use over there, not just the main parties like you know, Tony Blair's party, the Labour Party and the Conservative Party, not just those parties, but all the other parties in England and many of the ones in Ireland, including some of the terrorist organizations, the symbolism that they use are very, very, very ancient. So my work is not necessarily political, because it's not, you know, I'm not in the business of running around to try and save human beings. What I'm trying to do is save truth, because there is truth in the world, there's truth in people's hearts. And this conspiracy is very age old. So I start to realize that you need to be more of a historian, actually, because the subject of history has been tremendously distorted. So that even when you then try to educate people who, you know, into this, they unfortunately do not have the historical background. America, unfortunately, is a case in point. You're one of the rare people, you know, that has a tremendous knowledge of European and world history, Dr. Monteith, but a lot of people in this country unfortunately do not. And this leaves them then open to manipulation. You know,
I agree with everything you said. Now let's get to where does this age-old conspiracy come from? Because there has always been a conspiracy in the world. I mean, it existed certainly, you know, thousands of years ago. You get into the background of the writings of Plato and Aristotle, and they had one message, of course, for the regular students, but another message, of course, for the very talented ones, those who would become the rulers, like Alexander the Great. And, you know, and this carries on forward, fast forward to Leo Strauss teaching at the University of Chicago here, 30 or 40 years ago, the father of modern-day neoconservatives, and he laid this out, you know, there were always two messages, one for the elite and then one for the common folk. So, he recognized, of course, these same mysterious forces, only, of course, he embraced them. So tell us, what is your concept of this age-old conspiracy, or conspiracies, as it were?
Right, and of course, just the word conspiracy does not necessarily mean anything evil. A lot of even decent groups in the world have to be secretive because they want to preserve ancient secrets. You know, I think originally even Freemasonry, which of course has fallen under the satanic power now or since the 1700s, perhaps originally was actually a very beneficent, and you know, there's evidence that prove that Masonry originally was a very sacred thing, and it was an attempt to preserve sacred teachings. But you see, so that just the fact that there's a conspiracy in the world does not necessarily mean a bad thing. What we are talking about, just so your audience understands, is a political conspiracy that is based on the worship of the dark forces, based on the worship of power, that is based on the subjugation of ordinary people so that they are disassociated from themselves, so that they are made to be weaker than they normally are. There are certain conspiracies that prevent man from growing spiritually and emotionally and socially. These are the world conspiracies. They can be known as colonialism. They can be known as Illuminatism. There's lots of different terms. It's a philosophy of life in which people, a certain group of wealthy people who are power-hungry and are possessed by lower appetites, and basically the word I would use, it's a very old word to use, and perhaps we need to re-understand what this word means. These individuals are immoral in the true sense of that word. You know, the Greeks spoke about virtue. These are the virtueless ones. So these are people who have no virtue. They feel that strength is better than, you know, right. They teach by the example of their force, not by the force of their example. these are the ordinary, common sort of criminalistic people, but they're magnified many times because they have great power, and they want to hold on to that power. And they don't mind sacrificing everybody else. Now, you see, because there's two kinds of people in the world. There's those who advance by their own merit, who struggle and do the right thing and progress because they want to be creative and they want to, you know, master something. So they go on and advance under their own steam. That was the idea of America originally. Then there's the other kind of person who hasn't got that kind of ability, so they just stand still and they suppress everybody else lower than them. That gives them the false security of being high. Okay, so these are the kind of individuals we're talking about, and their bloodline families go back thousands and thousands of years ago. In my book on Atlantis, I kind of dedicate that book, the research of 30 years, to try and find out the origins. I don't think that one person has all the answers in this. I certainly don't. And I've got many mentors, both past in history and present today, that are looking into this subject as exactly when this kind of thing happened. And believe it or not, you know, as you are aware, this thing is very, very old. It goes way back, 3,000-4,000 years. Some people say more from the Celtic tradition. I've been able to trace it back many thousands of years ago. And you're right, Cicero, you know, was talking about it in Grecian times. The Book of Enoch talks about it more from the Christian side. There's been, it connects right back to the whole concept of the fallen angels and the presence of evil.
And I think that's what it's so difficult for people to believe. You know,
right.
they think when you're talking about such things, why you're in the X-Files sort of category. Well, I'll tell you what, sometimes there's an awful lot of truth in the X-Files, and there were people there that really understood these things, and they were trying to bring them out, and of course, in fiction form. Well, let's get back to this idea of Atlantis, because, of course, this has always been the idea that has intrigued Plato. Plato wrote about Atlantis in his dialogues, and certainly Francis Bacon wrote about lost Atlantis, and he dreamed of the time when America would become the new Atlantis. So why don't you give us the background of what you found about Atlantis. What was Atlantis? How was it lost? And how is it being reconstituted in the world today?
Because right, well, naturally there's a lot of disinformation about Atlantis. My work has also tried to clear up a lot of that disinformation by going to very early records, to the old mythologies of the world, to the old folk tales, and to the legends, because the legends and the folk tales were our ancient legacy. And they all speak about Atlantis. And you're right, many movies, many shows will talk about it, but they'll do it cryptically. For instance, one of the greatest Christian writers in England was J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote the famous Lord of the Rings, and C.S. Lewis. These were people who were at the pinnacle of Christian thought, but they completely and utterly believed in Atlantis in ancient times, that there were civilizations of long ago. You know, Tolkien himself said of all the mythical images, that the one about Atlantis was the one most deeply seated in his imagination, and it was the one that inspired him to write The Lord of the Rings, which of course is a fantastic moral tale about the dark side and the war of spiritual light and darkness, principalities in high places. So it's not an unreligious or unchristian concept. This is very much at the heart of what the Book of Revelation is about. It's certainly at the heart of what some of the apocryphal works is about, and like the Book of Enoch and so on. And it is in all the traditions of the world. They talk about the coming of the dark ones, the fallen angels, and their interference with the normal flow on earth. And I totally believe that the descendants of these fallen angels are ruling the world today. Not the original ones, but those people who were either infected spiritually by those forces or even genetically. There's even evidence that we have been genetically confused, so that we have this propensity for immorality and evil in us, which I do not believe is part of the natural order of things.
No, I don't think it is either. But of course, this is one of the basic teachings of Christianity, is that man is basically evil, and that's why, of course, you can never trust him with power. The only thing that can really change that, from the Christian point of view, is his personal relationship with our Lord.
Right.
We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Michael Sarian. I'm going to ask if our producer could come over here for just a moment and close the door before all the mosquitoes and the critters get into here. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael Cesarian. And Michael, of course, has written a book on Atlantis. So why don't you pick up the story there for us and tell us what you found. Your belief is, of course, that the fallen angels had something to do with this ancient land. Certainly we know that it's been written about by philosophers. And, of course, did it exist? Well, there are many, many people who did believe it existed. Certainly Plato believed it existed. And Plato lived about 2,400 years ago. About 400 B.C., so in writing somewhere in that time frame. So why don't you go ahead and tell us what you've discovered about this ancient society. I suppose it was a very advanced society, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, absolutely, because the belief is, you see, that the beings that visited us from other planets were highly technologically advanced. And, of course, the civilizations that they set up here for their own purposes were also very, very, very advanced. And many thousands of years even before Plato, in the old Celtic records, 5,000 years B.C., you actually have mention of the scribes at that time. And you have mention in Scandinavian mythologies, in the Indian, ancient mythologies of India, in the Mayan books of ancient Mexico, and in Celtic records, there is clearly mention of Atlantis. And my book goes into those sources to show you just how old this concept is. And yes, even though the land was very advanced, very dark and evil things were also going on there, because the trouble was that these aliens who came to our planet did not come here by choice, and they had no love, inherent love, for the planet or for the people here. And being scientists of extremely advanced nature, they started to genetically mess around with our Earth inhabitants here, because it is now being discovered by scientists, or it's always been proposed to us, that the concept of evil or injustice or immorality in the world has been with us for very long time, and of course it has, but wars specifically can be dated. The war instinct in human beings, many of the things that are very cruel about the human beings can be dated from a specific time, and then before that there wasn't so much of that going on. So there seems to be there's a lot of evidence for some sort of interference. And of course the ancient scribes knew how to write in a great deal of poetic license, and they would always write in a fanciful way. So you have to have a certain skill to be able to read what's behind there and what they're really trying to say. This is a fascinating thing, and my book goes very much into the records of all the legends of the world to talk about it. Yes, in the Atlantic Ocean, not far from where England is now and where Greenland and Iceland are, there was a gigantic continent. They've actually found the remnants of this continent now, and they call it Appalachia. It's under the fathoms down under the Atlantic Ocean. And on Appalachia, the records, like Plato, do talk about the fact that there was this ancient continent, and that some very powerful experimentation was being done there. This is the experimentation that gave rise to the sirens and the unicorns and the minotaurs, all sorts of hybrid creatures that actually did one time exist on our planet, and also certain dragon types of beings, and even men, humanoid beings that were very deformed. All of these creatures exist in our mythologies. And they also talk about the fact that there was a spiritual subversion, because even though these scientist alien visitors were tremendously scientifically and technologically advanced, they had closed off the emotional and the spiritual aspect of their own being. It's like a sort of Mr. Spock, but plus many, many times over, where the entire emotional circuitry, the whole concept of humanity, has been completely suppressed or conditioned out of them for thousands and thousands of years. So by the time that they had come to our planet, they are people that we would definitely term inhuman or of a satanic type of nature, which is why the ancient records always spoke of them as being that way.
Now, and hold that thought for just a moment as we bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Michael Cesarian, and he has, of course, written a book on ancient Atlantis. And it is his conviction that there were beings from other planets who came here, and there was a lost Atlantis, was a continent somewhere between Greenland and England or Europe, and that there is evidence that this is where this ancient civilization existed, that has been described in the writings of almost every civilization, and certainly we know that Plato wrote of it, but it has been found in the writings of many other civilizations. And of course I know for a fact that every civilization that has ever existed has a story of a great flood that came. And of course the Christian Bible tells us there was a great flood at the time of Noah, but all civilizations record that there was a great flood. Would that be a fairly accurate statement, Michael?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There was a flood. The flood actually took place. There was two cataclysmic events. I mean, actually, throughout the millions of years on our planet, there's been many. But in recent Earth history, there's been two monumental cataclysms. One of them was the flood. And that is believed to have taken place about 50,000 years ago. Between 30 and 50,000 years ago is now what the most modern scientists studying the fossil record are saying, that some sort of deluge or flood took place. When they're looking at the Sphinx in Egypt, when they're looking at the striations of rock in the world, they now are pretty happy to tell you that it was about 30 to 50,000 years ago there was this flood. Now, in my work, I've also discovered, and the professors in Oxford and Cambridge University, Allen and Dallaire, these are the top paleontologists and geologists in those two universities, came together and wrote a book proving that about 11,000 years ago, 11,000 BC, that is, 13,000 years from now, from where we are now, there was another cataclysmic event, which was a pole shift, a shifting of the polar axis. And that can mean many things. A lot of people say it's the flipping of the axis, you know, like 180 degrees. It doesn't necessarily need to mean that. It can just mean a rocking or a changing in the axis of the Earth. But any kind of wobble or any kind of movement like that is very dramatic and causes untold havoc on the planet.
And is this, of course, a shift of the magnetic poles you're talking about?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Because we've heard this. In fact, there's some rumbles that there may even be another major magnetic shift in the world sometime in the not-too-distant future.
Well, certainly. And then with this latest tsunami, people are talking about a mega tsunami. Well, these kinds of mega tsunamis and other devastations just like infinitely worse than that take place when the polar axis should shift. So it doesn't even need to go 180 degrees like most people say. Like any type of top or a football, it can just roll a little bit and then even come back to its sort of the position that it used to be. Any kind of movement like that for any reason, because a comet passes through our solar system or whatever, it can be absolutely devastating. And we know that this happens on planets all over the universe. This has been actually witnessed from Earth.
Well, I think, you know, what most people here in the comfort of our homes find it very difficult to believe is that 200,000 people were simply killed during
right.
this latest tsunami. I mean, you know, first of all, you know, 50,000, 100,000, and I think the latest figure was somewhere between 150 and 200,000 people. That is a statistic. It is hard to perceive that many people actually being their lives being destroyed by this natural event, or whatever caused it, a major cataclysmic event, really, in my experience, unparalleled during my lifetime. So I really believe we are on the edge of some very cataclysmic events occurring. Now, well, let's get back to, of course, Lost Atlantis. The Christian belief, and as you know, I'm coming from a Christian point of view, was that there were beings here on the Earth at a time. They were just totally evil, which would go along with your idea. Of
right.
course, the time of the Christian belief is that it was probably about 5,000 years ago. But we won't, at least for the sake of discussion, we won't argue on the times. They were very evil beings, but there was a very advanced society. And it was so advanced that the Christian belief is, of course, that God intervened and destroyed the earth because he could not allow these wicked people to be here. And you sort of mentioned that these wicked beings from outer space had actually been having intimate relations with the earthlings, and that was basically the story of the Bible. So there are certain similarities between what you have found in your belief and what I have found in my acceptance of the biblical story. So pick the story up anyway. We would agree it was a very, very evil society, but a very scientifically advanced society. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. And John Milton, the great Christian poet of England, John Milton is the writer of Paradise Lost. He literally sums it up when he says, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. That basically sums up the whole modus operandi, the motive of these beings. They had no love for our planet, they had no love for us or our ancestors, and they wanted to, you know, rule like kings and have a bunch of servants. This has been discovered in the Babylonian record with Zachariah Sitchin's work. This has been discovered by Emmanuel Velikovsky, another great historian. And I came across the same discoveries myself.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and one of the most difficult things for the average citizen, the average American, who has been raised in the comfort of this utopian society that we live in, it truly is a utopian society, is to realize that there are people who are totally evil. They have, for all intents and purposes, no redeeming social qualities. Oh, they may play with children, they may smell the flowers, they may say the nice things, but of course they're motivated, they're energized by evil, and of course you see manifestations of this all the time, but you sort of reject this because it's too horrible to accept. We saw the pictures of what happened in Rwanda. We never, of course, stop and think that there was a Canadian military contingent there. And the Canadian general asked permission if he could intervene and stop the slaughter as they were systematically hacking to death 800,000 Christians. And, of course, the man from the United Nations said under no circumstances was he to intervene. That man was Kofi Annan. The Canadian general obeyed his orders and eventually became suicidal and a drunk. An alcoholic, because he realized that at a time of moral crisis, he had not had the courage to do what he should have done, and 800,000 people died, and he had the military power, and he could have stopped it, but of course Kofi Annan, who incidentally is the darling of the internationalists, and we find Paul Volcker doing everything he can to protect Kofi Annan, who says, oh, it wasn't me, it was my son, who was violating the laws, and of course, you're making all this money out of Saddam Hussein. You have to understand these evil people, they work together. There is a brotherhood of darkness there. But anyway, pick up this story. You know, there really is evil in the world, and I think that this is such an important message, and I think you helped to get that. This is part of the message you're trying to get out too, isn't it, Michael?
Undoubtedly. And you're absolutely, the point you made is very important to people to grasp. Because these individuals lack inherent spiritual and moral power, they make up for that in number. So that's why they're always a congeree. They're always a cabal. They need the power of many, the numbers, because they lack spiritual power. You know, the truly great in the world don't necessarily need to work in a congeree like that. They have their own inherent power, and they take responsibility for their own actions and for their own lives. These individuals are, part of their evil nature is that they do hide behind the thrones of power. They do exercise power with a pen from a penthouse. And they do their killings, you know, remotely. And so therefore, it doesn't appear to be, it's not so easy to connect these people's crime, you know, connect the person to the crime.
Yeah, hold that thought for just a moment as we bring our stations up. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Michael certainly has written a book on Atlantis, and he has simply been telling us that there really are evil people in the world, and of course that is the recurrent theme we try to get out, that there really is the dark forces that are here, and you can't understand any of the things going on unless you understand there is organized evil in the world. That's the story of my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And before we go on, Michael, just so I don't forget, would you like to get your website and your telephone number out if people would like to get more information from you?
Yeah, people can call me at 206-527-2968. For information and also to learn about the book and how they can get it. This book is very controversial, as your book is also, so it's not widely available. In fact, right now it's only available through me because I wanted to keep the integrity of my work. So if people are interested in the book, the best place is to get it from my website and from me personally. And of course they can get a signed copy and so on, or they can just come on down to Conspiracy Con and we'll all be there together and they can get it there. But people who want a copy right away can definitely call me at that number, 206-527-2968, or just go online. On my website, there's an Atlantis page, and there's a shopping cart, and people can buy the book that way. We also have it as an e-book for those people who wanted to download it to their computers so that they can travel and read it on their computer. We have that at another website called AtlantisBook.com. So the e-book can be got from AtlantisBook.com. And the physical book can be bought online at my own website, taroscopes.com.
All right, and one more time, the telephone number.
Yeah, it's 206 527 2968.
All right, fine. And if you are interested in the conspiracy conference, it's going to be held the 28th and 29th. You have to call ahead of time. The number is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. And anyway, go ahead and sort of pick up the story there. And you know, we were basically talking about this realization that there have always been these evil beings here, and these date back through thousands and thousands of years. Do you think that they, of course, continue to exist? There's a bloodline of these evil people in the world?
There's no doubt in my mind that that is the reason, because ordinary people, as bad as they sometimes are, or as immoral as they sometimes become, usually, most of us become like that through necessity or through having a very difficult and hard life. That is not the same kind of evil that I'm talking about. The kind of worldwide, global, monstrous, satanic evil that perpetrates in untold genocides and cataclysms all over the world is not originating from the average, you know, person in the street. These are bloodline people that have a very cold and definite, power-hungry streak. I want to read you a small paragraph from an ancient book. This is an example of what I was talking about. This quote I'm going to read is in my own book, and it's from the Mayan Popol Vuh. The Popol Vuh is one of the only books left that was not burned by the conquistadors in the Mexicos, and in it there's this incredible statement. It's the gods talking about their creation, and the quote goes, "Let us make him who shall nourish and sustain us. What shall we do to be invoked, to be remembered in earth? We have tried with our first creatures, but we could not make them venerate us. So then, let us try to make obedient, respectful beings who shall nourish and sustain us." So, first of all, that tells us why the Mexican books were burned, because if that's an example of what was in them, no wonder they were being burned. And the most important thing it tells us is that, yes, the gods created slave beings in order to serve them. First of all, these beings were not gods. The very fact that they call themselves gods is ludicrous, because that's all part of the whole game, is to set themselves up as the creator, to set themselves up as overlords, when, of course, we know that there's the universal creator. But then these individuals think of themselves as gods, and to our ancient forefathers, they obviously apparently appeared like gods. And just like in many science fiction movies, you either believed it or they zapped you and killed you, so you had no choice. And over many generations, of course, we grew up, the children, to believe that these were the ancestors, to believe that these were the gods. And they built great cities, and they could do all sorts of medical things for people, and they flew in spacecrafts, and they, you know, they did all sorts of, they had all these great wars. So of course they did come down in our mythologies as the gods, but of course they are not gods. These are just people setting themselves up as that. And yes, the bloodline, it has now become a great subject within the research community, within the conspiracy movement, to discover the fact that all the modern, what we're calling the modern conspiratorial movements, have a very, very ancient history. That is why you find Egyptian symbols on America. That's why you find the ancient Roman eagle. All the symbolism points to this. But you see, my speciality is to go, like you do, to their own works, to their own words. Because this job is hard enough to explain to people and to convince people, especially if you do it in a very uneloquent and sort of half-handed way. So I always believe that if you're going to suit up to try and help people with this subject and bring the subject to the people, you better do it very, very eloquently. That's number one, the most important thing. And the two, the most important thing, is to go to sources, to go right to the horse's mouth, right to the conspirators themselves, because these people wrote things down. Some of them very voluminously wrote things down, like, for instance, Colonel Mandel House, one of the conspirators in America's history, you know, and Carol Quigley, and many of the figure, Adam Weishaupt, the leader of the Illuminati. Many of these Freemasons wrote down in writing what they were doing, and those books can still be found at great labor.
I'll tell you what, they make it very difficult for you sometimes to find one, but when you find some of the original material, it's almost simply like finding a keg full of gold. I mean, it's so important, so valuable, and of course, you're not into this for the personal aggrandizement or for the wealth, and certainly I'm not in it as well.
No, I've gone hungry for 30 years precisely because, you know, of trying to afford these incredibly expensive books. And I specialize, actually, in these books. I'm like an authority on these books and know where to get them and how to get them, and also, more importantly, what's in them. And what's in them always opens my eyes, and it's my duty then to, you know, explain it to other people, because I'm not actually asserting myself any point of view. All I'm saying to people is, please read this and draw your own conclusions. Understand that the whole of modern history has been manipulated, all the modern utopian world that we have didn't just pop out of the blue overnight. It's resting on the shoulders of history. You know, when you go to all the beautiful cities of the world, Milan, Rome, London, Paris, and you look at all these splendid buildings, just realize that it's not your children going to these schools, it's not your kids, you know, it's not your family living in all of this splendor and in all of these wonderful state buildings, but somebody built them, somebody designed the cities to be the way they are, somebody created these edifices, somebody put up all these pagan symbolism of the obelisks and the clock towers and all of this stuff, you know, and who did it and why? And what kind of knowledge were they drawing upon? This is the same group of people who operate behind the, you know, the corporate world today, behind the business world today, behind the religious world today, and they're trying to get us all to fight each other. So, you know, conferences like Conspiracy Con are very, very, very rare, because in the ordinary media, even with the Amy Goodmans and the Seymour Hirsches and the Noam Chomskys and whoever, you can't fully trust what these people are saying. And first of all, none of them go very deep. All they do is keep restating the problem. They keep telling you, you know, more of the atrocities of Big Brother, but they never actually tell you what to do about it. They never empower you. So organizations like Conspiracy Con are probably one of the only public types of venue where you can not only come to hear more of the problem think, but you can actually come to hear solution think. And that is what I do. That's why, you know, I very much admire your work and do support your work and your show, because, again, you're about, you know, the solutions. This is very rare in the world. A lot of anybody can deconstruct, and anybody can state the problem in this world. And many, many people are getting big fat checks for doing that, like the Michael Moores of the world. But Michael Moore himself was on Charlie Rose, you know, shortly after he made Fahrenheit 9/11. And Charlie Rose, I think, asked Michael Moore at least a half a dozen times. And I am not joking here. Michael Moore was asked no less than half a dozen times, why is all of this happening? Who is doing all of this? And why is this happening? And every single time he was asked, he simply replied, I don't know. Like a parrot. I don't know, I don't know, I don't know.
Well, and I think that's really what's so important, is that you can talk about what's going on. I mean, I think Noam Chomsky, I agree with many of the things he says.
Me too.
But he doesn't understand why it's happening. He doesn't understand the spiritual components behind the scenes. He doesn't understand what has brought all of these things on. And certainly, Michael Moore, I mean, some of what he says is absolutely right. But all he can do is stand there and criticize without ever trying to give an explanation. And unless people understand how it all fits together, if they can begin to connect the dots, unless they understand the historical and the spiritual, you're just spinning your wheels.
They are like people who go to the scene of a crime and photograph that crime from every conceivable angle and then publish all the findings. Yes, that's wonderful work, and they probably should get, you know, accolade for that. But there's a world of difference between, you know, taking photographs of a crime and actually going out and finding the perpetrator. So we are coming of the age now where the truth is going to come to the surface, you know, that nothing that is evil or hidden can last forever. Like in Luke, it says that which will be hidden will come out to the surface. We are now in the age in which certain people are going to have to put aside some of their street-level partisan divisions that have been artificially created to keep them dumbed down, and come and support the people and read and discover and learn about what has really been going on this planet. Because you're not going to get it from official sources as we know. You'll have, they'll whet your appetite, certainly, and they'll certainly use the carrot and the stick approach when it comes to mysteries. But they're not going to explain those mysteries. So, you know, Conspiracy Con and events like that are the ones in which you not only are told what's really going on in this world, but you also are given solutions as to what to do about it.
All right, well, let's go to Charlie, who's calling us from Aptos, who's been waiting patiently on the line.
Great.
Charlie, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I wonder if you might elucidate a bit on, and also where in the hierarchy you would place somebody like the Black Pope.
By the Black Pope, you're speaking now of the head of the Jesuits.
Right. Since I've been in America, that's one thing I've been trying to study a lot. The John Phelps and Jordan Maxwell, I've been learning from them. This is not my specialty specifically. I'm very interested in it. I understand that Adam Weishaupt, who is the head of the Illuminati, was first of all a Jesuit priest. So my thinking is that he was funded by the Jesuits. I think that they're also behind a lot of other conspiracies in the world, even involving a lot of some very sinister stuff. But I'm again at this point researching that. I haven't I don't know enough in order to make a statement right now. You know, it's a fascinating subject, and since I've been in America, I find that a lot of my mentors are more up on that one. So I hesitate to actually, you know, put them in the where they are in the hierarchy. That's a very good question, but it's a little bit hard to answer. You know, for all we know, they could be the very top of the pyramid. But you know what? I think what a good general rule is that if you see any of these figures in the media, meaning that if you see them on TV, if you see them in the newspaper, or if you see them in a historical book or an encyclopedia, chances are that they are what I refer to as merely overworld figures. What I mean by that is that they are lower-level henchmen. And I mean, obviously they can appear very high up to us, like the George Bushes of the world, like the Black Pope, Cardinal Spellman, and like, you know, Brzezinski, and, you know, Putin, or whoever. But my actual real thinking, after years and years and years of studying this subject, is that if you see them in the public, 90% of the time, they are not the controllers. This has to be firmly understood, because the Gorbachevs and the Brzezinskis and the Roosevelts of the world and the Clintons and all of the Thatchers, these individuals are, again, they're not the steering committee. They are the agents who are presented in front of us in order to win our allegiances, you know, give us this rags-to-riches, girl-or-boy-next-door story, you know, and put on the human face to something that is incredibly anti-human. And
when you mentioned the Babylonian, Egyptian, Roman connection,
yeah,
spiritually, how would that factor in with, well, what do you know about the Roman Church?
Well, I'm very suspicious of them in the sense, not against Catholicism.
I mean, what do you know concretely about the Roman Church and its Babylonian rituals that
have been passed on for
thousands of years?
Oh, I have studied that
extensively. Unaltered.
There was a book that came out that I read in the 70s by Bishop Hislop called The Two Babylons, and that was a fantastic book that put me on to the fact that in my early years, that of course there was tremendous paganism behind the Roman Church. Now, Ken, I have to emphasize that when I'm talking about the Roman Church, I'm not talking about necessarily Roman Catholicism as a religion. What we're talking about here is Vatican. The Vatican edifice, the Vatican state within a state, okay? The Vatican occult edifice. I mean, the word Vaticanus actually means the place of the sorcerers. If you look it up in Latin, the word Vaticanus means the place of the sorcery, or the place of the great mind control that takes place in the world. So I would first of all distinguish between Roman Catholicism as a religion, right, that people believe in, that's a separate subject, and the edifice that is running that, or behind that, the whole hierarchy.
Don't you think that most of our religious organizations, whether it be Protestant or Jewish or Catholic, they've all been infiltrated by these same dark forces?
Unquestionably. Anything that is pure, anything that led man towards spiritual probity and spiritual purity, absolutely would be instantaneously contaminated, because that's where they had to get in, isn't it? How can they bring the mindset down? They did it to our ancestors who didn't even have Orthodox religions. They destroyed whole civilizations that we don't even know existed today because they're completely wiped off the face of the earth. Well, of course they're going to then move in on the Western paradigm and move in and try to subjugate any type of teacher, any type of saint, any type of person you know, who comes in to steer man again, even in a small way, to look at the fate of Jesus Christ, look at the fate of Buddha, look at the fate of the great teachers of the world, you know, and even lesser men. Even if they should try to call people back to sanity, for goodness sake, even if they try to call people back to simple ethics that are street-level ethics, those people will be, you know, swamped in a sea of debauchery that is coming over the media, you know?
Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Ray, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, do you have a question for your guest?
I had a comment. The man that called earlier about the Jesuits.
Right.
I wonder if your guest knew that Heinrich Himmler, who's the Reichsfuhrer of the SS in Nazi Germany, called himself the Black Jesuit.
That's very interesting. I didn't know that, Ray.
He did.
He called himself the Black Jesuit. I've never heard that. Of course, the thing is that all of the movement, certainly the Reich, the Nazi movement, was deeply involved in the occult. In fact, their emblem of, on the SS was the skull and crossbones. They were really coming right out of the Thule Society. Adolf Hitler was reading Madame Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine on a regular basis. So you can't really understand Nazism unless you understand its occult foundations.
Exactly, and I think your caller is right. I do believe that Himmler was raised as an agriculturist, And when he first joined some of the original proto-Nazi organizations.
Right, he was a farmer, yeah.
Yeah, he was funded by the Jesuit order. I do seem to recognize that. And I do know that he often called himself a Black Lodge, and he referred to the proto-Nazis as a, he referred to the SS as a, you know, a Black Lodge.
Yeah.
And the symbolism alone, yeah, tells you that they were up to something. That symbolism is very ancient.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I think, Ray, the important thing is to realize that the whole foundation of Nazism was in the occult, and that has been very carefully suppressed, although I think it's a History Channel that has a wonderful DVD out there on the cult history of the Third Reich. And everybody, if you haven't seen that, you really should. That's an amazing, amazing documentary.
I just checked a film out of the library called Genocide. It was written by the head of the Rabbi Heyer, I think it is, and it was—it's really an incredible movie. I've been watching it, and I kind of—it kind of triggered that.
No, hey, we got to go. Just a moment.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Fuck this.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Michael Tsarian, who's going to be a speaker over at the Conspiracy Conference, and it's been a fascinating hour. We've got about 3 minutes to wrap things up. What would you like to leave with our listeners tonight? What message would you like to leave? I think there's some people who want to say it's all the Jesuits. Some people want to say it's all the Vatican. Some people want to say it's all the Jews. Some people just want to say it's all the Masons. Some people want to say it's all the Rockefellers, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you respond to those people?
Well, I've come through all of that myself. In my own journey, you get definitely sidetracked into different areas of this, and that's okay. That's perfectly fine. In the growth of discovery, you have to go down like a detective, and you have to, you know, follow all the different miscellaneous criminals who are party to this massive global conspiracy or crime. There's no doubt about that. And all the groups that you talk about are in some way involved, because, of course, all of these groups are part of the great jigsaw. They've all been manufactured. They've all been created in this great canvas of conspiracy. But my message is that in the very short time, in the next 10 years, and in half that time, I believe, for instance, that Hillary Clinton will be the president of America in 2008. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I think that in half that time, American people are going to see massive changes that let almost even the ordinary individual, not just you and me and a few of the callers that have called in and some other people listening who know about this or have been following up on this, but the masses of people in America are going to know in about 3 years' time that something is really up. They're going to know what the third world knows, that Big Brother is alive and well, and that there is conspiracy moving in the world. We are coming into the time right now, right into the age, in which our own origins and destiny is going to be exposed, who we really are, how we came to this planet, how we came to this predicament, and where exactly we are on the scale is all going to be revealed in the next 10 years in the countdown to 2012. And my message to people is to definitely continue, as we've been saying on this program, to empower themselves through knowledge and education. But much more important than that is to try and find your inner center, your peace, because the deceptions are going to become even thicker. The mind control is going to become even stronger in the countdown. Because as truth comes into the world, the adversarial energy also increases in frequency and power. And simple intellectual discovery is not going to off-put that. What individuals need to do is get back to some core inherent morality, core inherent virtue, find their center, and I don't care what way they have to do that, if that means cleaving more to their particular spiritual faith or adopting one, or just finding some path that they can, you know, get in touch with who they are inside. That is the only place to be immune right now, because the sea of lies that's coming over the television and through the media, and many of the idioms that our fathers and our forefathers used to take for granted, are passing away before our eyes right now.
We're out of time. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, Michael.
Much bye-bye. Appreciated.
This is Dr. Stan, and of course, I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Michael. Michael certainly is, I believe, has a fascinating amount of information put out. I'm looking forward to getting a copy of his book entitled Atlantis at the Conspiracy Conference. No, I don't believe he's coming from the same Christian or Judeo-Christian point of view that I am, but I really do believe it's very, very important that that we understand the wisdom of what he's saying. We are involved in a spiritual battle. The ancient secret societies have been here going back for thousands of years, and of course it's really up to us to understand what's going on and to teach others. I believe that Michael is absolutely right. We are moving into a major crisis in our society, and that the country we have known is not going to continue to be here. You need to understand what this is about. You need to answer that age-old question. And that is where you're going to spend eternity. And, of course, I think that, you know, we're all going to live forever. I believe there is a soul that is immortal. And the question is, where are we going to spend eternity? And if you were to, of course, stand before the gates of heaven tomorrow and ask why you should be allowed to enter, what possible justification could you give to enter into heaven with a holy God that... you know, all of us have certainly sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. It's a question I think you should ask yourself very, very seriously, because we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men, and so many souls are being and have been lost simply because of the affluence of our society and because of the progressive erosion of the moral values of our people. Let me suggest, if you have not yet read my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, that you seriously consider getting it and understanding how all of these various organizations fit together. That's The Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can get it in book form, in by videotape, or you can get it by audiotape. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have a wonderful book. It's called... Lucifer's Children, going into the background of how this fits together. We have another book called Lucifer's Lodge. We have a four-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends. We have a four-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance, because these are not imaginary things. They are really very, very real. And then, of course, we have videos, a set of videos entitled They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And you can get the three-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, either on video or on DVD now. And we recommend this very, very strongly, because you are actually going to see many of the people who have been so successful in the music industry talk about how they've sold their souls. They've sold their souls to the devil. The devil is not imaginary. He's real. That's the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get some of the other videos we carry, like Megiddo 1, which gives the history of the prophecies. 2 1/4 hours, very professionally done. Megiddo 2, which, of course, goes into the background of the history of the secret societies and their impact on the world today. And I'm even in that, talking about Madame Blavatsky and the Georgia Guidestones, which you'll see. Well, we ask you, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Please pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.